Dana Frampton. I'm the principal of Frampton Co. We're a 12-person interior design studio. We also have a unique art advisory division, which really sets us apart. We opened the space exhibition as a way to connect with people and reflect our curatorial ideas. This has been long in the making, and I am so excited to have these two guys here tonight. And I want to say, we launched Salon Series as a way to engage in a deeper dialogue. I feel like we're all looking on Instagram, flip, not understanding context, not understanding why, and kind of looking on a superficial level. So we launched Salon Series to have a deeper conversation. Specifically for this evening, I wanted to add that I'm going to go off script, so I'm sorry. The marketing people get nervous when I do this. But the truth is, I don't really like gallery openings so much. I find it's like crowded. I can't experience the work. I really love going to galleries when it's slow, when no one's there, going in the back storage room and looking at inventory. That's really what jazzes me up. That's when I go to sleep at night fulfilled. It's when I have those moments. I also love studio visits. And so my hope for tonight is that this conversation gives everyone here the opportunity to have the studio visit that I had with these gentlemen. So please join me in welcoming Joseph and Omar. My relationship with both is pretty different, and I think it's going to make for a pretty dynamic conversation. Joseph, I have known for over 15 years, and I have a special connection with him because, now this is back in the day when I would find things I liked and clip them out of magazines and newspapers and put them in a folder and a file, and I had my art folder. So I had a job in an office with my art folder. When I left my job, I had a couple projects right out of the gate, and I had the opportunity to introduce myself to Joseph, and I wrote to him and I said, I know you've never heard of me, I'm nobody, I've worked at an office, but I love your work. I have no idea how expensive it is, I have no idea what's for sale, I don't know how this works, but I keep staring at these pictures and I want to know you and I want to know the work. So my first art purchases as an independent designer were Joseph's works.
And I have to say, I mean, Elena always supported me from like way back when, and you know, we've had a pretty, you know, consistent relationship since then, and so I'm happy to be here to support her and her firm.
2.5 weeks ago, I was in Mexico City. I had an itinerary that was too packed, with too much, but a wonderful adventure, and by far the highlight was my visit to Omar's studio. We had never met before. I met him 2.5 weeks ago. But the studio, if you can imagine, this very cool building with natural light coming into the car park. His wife is a talented architect. She designed this space. I went up the stairs to the top floor, light coming in, and I turned the corner, and there it was, this explosive work. And I had no idea what to expect, really. Mm-hmm. But it was something I hadn't really seen before. So your wife welcomed me with coffee and pastries, and not like pastries we have all the time, like pastries. And I saw the process, the way it was set up, the process was laid out. There were, was it plywood, the boards?
Yeah.
Plywood boards stacked up, a shape cut out, one with linen, mm-hmm. and then the final work.
Yeah.
And I was taken by his ability to talk about his work, which a lot of creatives have a hard time. They sort of assume that you understand it, and that's why I'm here. I'll take the hit for you guys. I'll ask the naive questions, like, where did this come from? How did this happen? So that's my story with Omar.
Thank you for inviting me.
We're so happy to have you. And you're here for like a week or
yeah,
not even?
Yeah, until Sunday. It's not many days.
So let's take it back.
let's cut through, take it back. Where were you born? Where'd you go to school? What was your first inkling that you had this creative sort of feeling? Like, how did you know?
Do you want to go first? I'll go first. Okay. So I grew up in the household of a painter. My father was a painter. So like any good young boy, I didn't want to be like my father. And so I did everything I could to avoid being an artist. And so I went and studied physics in college. But I drew all my life. I was always exposed to art. So I always was involved in like the creative process. My parents were very supportive, sent me drawing classes, painting classes. I painted at home in high school. And when I was in college, it just wasn't working out. So I had to do something if I was gonna stay in college. So I switched to art because it was just like, they'd accept me, you know, in that program. And so I changed to art and it just worked, you know, I excelled there. And then when I finished college and I was just like, all right, I'm done. I'm gonna be a graphic designer. I don't wanna be a painter. I don't wanna be like my father. And so I tried to get a job as a graphic designer. I taught programming. I got really involved in kind of like new media, but always on the kind of commercial side. And then someone said, oh, a friend called me up. She's like, oh, we'd like to show some of your paintings in a show. And so I gave her some paintings, and then I started showing a little bit, and then someone was like, oh, you should do grad school for painting. I was like, okay, I'll go to grad school. Got a good scholarship, went to good school, did a master's in painting. And then I finished that, and I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm never gonna paint again. I moved back to Mexico instead of New York, which was probably like the best idea I ever had in my life. Not because there's anything wrong with New York, but just being an artist, a young artist in New York is super difficult. And so I went back to Mexico, started doing like documentaries, graphic design again, programming. And then I got this like artist grant, young artist grant in Mexico, which they basically gave me a monthly salary to work, you know, the government grants. And I said, well, if someone's gonna pay me the paints, I might as well just start painting for real, like take it seriously, you know? And I started painting seriously, and then I realized, you know, I'm really lucky, you know, like I was really lucky. I never looked or never searched and tried to be like a painter. It's not that I wasn't doing it, you know, I wasn't trying to paint and do good work, but it wasn't my plan. And then all of a sudden I was doing it, and I said, if I'm gonna do this, I might as well do it for real. And that's how I ended up doing that.
My experience is quite different. My mom and dad were born and raised in Italy. I'm first generation American. My parents are from Sicily. So I grew up in an environment where my parents, you know, till this day, I don't even think they still understand what I do. So I really had to find my way. So, you know, I'm self-taught as an artist. My degree was in marketing in college and graduated from school. And, you know, as a child, I was always creating things. I would lie to my mother about needing, you know, construction supplies and pens and paper and, you know, crayons and sparkles and glue. And
like, at what age are we talking?
Young. I was like probably five, you know. Like, I remember, like, you know, going to school and saying, if I don't get these supplies, they're gonna like send me home, you know, which wasn't true. So, you know, my sort of journey to be an artist came from a very different perspective and different place. And I remember when I first came back to New York, I lived in Los Angeles from 1990 to 2000. You know, it was at that moment where I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm set, you know, this is what I'm meant to be doing. And, you know, I started working and the right people started paying attention to my work and the right collector started then collecting my work. And then I joined the Robert Miller Gallery, which I was with for most of my career. And that really kind of cemented, like, you know, kind of my reality. But, you know, it certainly wasn't an easy journey, especially coming from a background of parents who really didn't have any idea of, you know, how to support that. You know, like most, like, immigrant parents, I think they just want you to become a doctor or an attorney or, you know, whatever. So, you know, my journey to get here was, I would say, you know, it wasn't difficult, I would say. It was just, you know, not the conventional way of going about being an artist. So, you know.
Well, it's being true to your conviction and, like, knowing what you want to do and right. doing it despite not having necessarily a role model or someone saying, yes,
and
go for it.
I don't think I ever did have a role model right. for anything, to be honest. So, you know, it was definitely like my own sort of motivation and commitment to doing what I wanted to do.
But it sounds like with both of you, it was immediately after education working as an artist. I mean, was there a period where you were doing other jobs to support yourself? Or, I mean, it's a little too fairy tale, so I need a little more, no, you know.
I mean, I graduated from college with a marketing degree, so I was working for pharmaceutical companies, consumer product companies. I lived in Los Angeles, so, you know, then that led to other things. And, you know, so again, like I would say that I've experienced lots of different, you know, opportunities and situations, and like again, you know, luckily I've been a working artist for the last 30 years of my life. Well, not quite 30, but so you know, I feel fortunate, and I feel blessed every day that I'm able to call myself an artist and live the life that I do as a result of my work. Because you know, in the past, you'd have to be dead in order to be successful or be deemed, you know, a working artist, and you know, so I recognize that. You know, in many ways, I'm fortunate to be in the position that I'm in.
For me, it was a little bit different. I guess it was more conventional in the way things work out nowadays. I moved back to Mexico after my master's, and being there, I got a call from someone because I'd worked in galleries in Philadelphia, and they said, well, this big new gallery needs some help doing some installs for Damien Hirst's show. So I started working there, and then I started like helping fabricate and like make stuff and kind of assisting in the process of creating these works. And eventually that led to a gallery, the same gallery that I was working for, seeing my work, and they're like, we really like your work, we'd like to start representing you. And then it kind of like switched, but I was also very fortunate that most people that doesn't happen to. It was like, I think what happened is I was in Mexico at the right time. Like when I went back in 2005, there weren't many people painting in Mexico. Mexico was very heavily leaning towards conceptual art, you know, more social practice, which is still is in many ways. But I got there at a point where there wasn't like much competition in what I was doing, that a lot of galleries started being interested in my work, and I was able to kind of like start wiggling my way into the door. And yeah, so the last 15 years, I've been able to start working as an artist and eventually become self-sufficient that way.
And was there a point where you felt like you understood what your creative intention was? Like, is that something really, I know it's evolving, we've talked a lot about that, but was there a moment where you thought, I have to express myself in this way, or this is what I think, and this is what I need to do? Or was it like, I got to figure out a way to be an artist and make a living as an artist? Or is it all of that?
I was pretty like set. Like it wasn't like something that I was undecisive about. You know, it was there. I knew that that's what I would be doing. And, you know, like having a vision for whatever it is you want to do in life and sort of following that path and understanding that, you know, if you sort of visualize things to be true, that eventually they do come into fruition. And I always felt that way, so.
I'm gonna write that down. That's so true. No, I live that way.
For me, I think being a painter in my generation, I think history was always like this big, heavy weight that we were kind of dragging around, especially like thinking about the history of painting. And I guess it was partially my education or the group of artists I was hanging out with when I was younger, that we were all worried about how we could fit in into this broader conversation about the history of painting and what did we actually have to say to it, you know? I started out as a figurative painter and I started to really worry about, like I was always really concerned about like, what is my subject? What am I really talking about? And I realized that the one thing, now looking back in retrospect, is that I was always really concerned about how you created space in paintings, how you constructed a visual experience that functioned as image, but also was very clear and transparent in the process it was constructed. And it took me a long time to get from where I was when I finished my education to where I am now. And I've I mean, myself, I'm always full of doubts, and at times I've wanted to just abandon painting, not only to be like do film or to just like abandon visual arts in the whole, but rather to like explore other mediums, be it sculpture, or just drawing, or performance, installation, dance. But in the end, there was always something that was drawing me back to painting, and I think it had to do a lot about that idea of how you create, how do you construct this pictorial experience. And I think that became really the core of my practice, of like kind of always revolving about how you can explore and push and pull at that.
I like my experience, again, like I think very different. For me, like what I realized was that my need to sort of unravel, like, you know, discover something. It's almost like self-identification to a certain extent, like peeling away the layers of kind of like, you know, who we are as people, our emotions, you know, like this DNA that's extracted from who we are, where we came from, and constantly like picking at it and trying to, you know, get more information. So like the evolution of my work, you know, unless I'm discussing it, really comes from this place of really peeling away the layers until there's nothing left, and then bringing it to life as something else again. But yet the core and the genealogy and the heredity of it is consistent with the past into the present. It's just that I'm disguising it as something else. And I think even more so in the last year and a half, you know, based on the installation on Park Avenue that, you know, that I was fortunate to be part of, that really sort of opened up the scope of my understanding in an even greater way, because I felt like suddenly, you know, my interest in not only the conceptual aspect of my work and process, it also had to do with this, you know, this pushing of boundaries, you know, in relationship to materiality, along with my process, and you know, my interest in taking passive materiality and activating it through force and pushing it to the point of collapse, or you know, to the point of it becoming something else. So, you know, that was almost kind of like an epiphany for me, you know, during that period of time. And I understand even more now that that's the genesis of my work, in a way that is more emotional and sort of driven by that.
That you can see through a reflection.
Yeah.
Like looking back.
Yeah. And you wouldn't necessarily understand that when you see my work. Right. Because it's more conceptual, I would say.
Right.
So.
But also, so you talk about materiality.
Yeah.
It's almost shocking how, like, all the materials that you're using and have been using, from photography to paper to painting to installations to the rubber to the steel to, I mean, let's talk about your material and your use of material and how you're choosing the medium for these ideas.
I think like there's always, for me, like the existence of the work travels from, you know, from medium to medium. Like I work pretty seamlessly between paintings, drawings, sculpture, because I see the evolution of the work becoming something else. It's almost like I'm cloning my own information, my own sort of forms, my own abstractions to sort of take shape as another living object, you know, hence the materiality and the sculptures on Park Avenue. You know, for me, those became living sculptures because I was taking passive materiality and I'm activated the material to the point of, you know, collapse. But I knew that the hope in the sculptures was that they weren't going to collapse and that they would continue to exist, outlive me, outlive all of us sitting here, because I knew that I was choosing a material at that point in time that would have the capacity to do that. You know, it's like pushing like yourself as a person, like, you know, where can you go? Like, what can you achieve? You know, what can you put up with? Like, what are you capable of sustaining? So I see my work in the same way conceptually, but when it's derivative of the materiality that we're talking about, I think that that's the essence of it as well.
You know, for me, it's funny because in many ways, for me, the great fear really has always been defined a little bit by my father. You know, going back to this, like the baggage, everybody has their own like psychological baggage they carry, you know. My father, he did theater, he did sculpture, he did film, he did painting, and always he was always very good at everything. But one thing I realized is that he never broke through at any point because he was always jumping from one thing to the next. Now, I mean, the 80s...
That was fear that he was... Because sometimes people...
No, I think it was...
They get to a point where they can't handle it anymore.
You know, I had never thought about that way. I think he was just always curious. Right. And I've always been curious about exploring these ideas through different mediums as well. But I think my fear has always been to be what they say is like a jack of all trades and a master of none, you know? And for me, that's really led me to focus a lot on expanding my practice always from the perspective of painting, you know, or of the ideas of painting. So when I encroach into sculpture or I do more graphic works, be they prints, silkscreens, or etchings, I'm always coming to it from the perspective of someone working from the tradition of painting and how I can expand upon the vocabulary that I use in my work. And that feeds into the work I'm doing that's not painting, but also when I start doing, be it etchings or sculptures, that feeds back into painting, so then it expands what I think I can do in painting, so they can become more three-dimensional, I can start using a lot more materials, using more elements that are graphic or drawing-like, and it seems to be kind of tumble into each other, but it's always with this fear that if I stray too far, my practice is going to just fall apart.
And I think that this is interesting because, like, hearing it from you, like, academically going to school to be a painter and, you know, being self-taught as an artist, I'm not thinking about any of that.
Yes.
There's no fear in what, like, when I see something visually in my mind or I imagine it, I'm so clear and I'm so, there aren't any restraints in terms of how I see I'm going to get things. Mm-hmm. You know, get there. So I have the opposite experience where, you know, I think for me, moving from different mediums is because my work is interrelated, mm-hmm. and there's aspects of it that, you know, like literally when I refer to DNA and sort of dissection of things, it's almost like, you know, I'm sitting there as a scientist and I'm like taking little parts of things and taking things out of it and then rediscovering and having them become something else. So it's interesting to hear you say that, you know, the fear comes from the painting aspect of it and always wanting it to be back to the discipline of it.
Well, it's more of a, and I wouldn't attribute to the academic element of my education, but rather the fact that I always, when I related to people that knew my father, they were always saying like, oh, he was so talented, but he was always looking for a different way of exploring what he wanted, like his life, or a new opportunity came up and he was always jumping from one thing to the next. So it's, I guess, a lack of consistency that I fear, you know, a lack of the depth that you can explore when you're focused on an idea, you know. A few years ago, I thought of just giving up painting. Like halfway in my career, this was like right before I started the body of work I'm working on here. Like I'd already been published, I started showing internationally, I lived off my work, and my daughter was about to be born, and my wife was like, are you crazy? Like, why are you gonna change what you're doing? And I said, the paintings I'm doing, they're not enough, you know? They're not taking me where I want to go as an artist. And at that point I was like, maybe I just need to stop painting, because I'd been building these sculptures and painting them and painting from them. And I was like, maybe I should just do sculpture. And I said, no, wait, stop. Maybe I can assuage all these concerns and explore the things I want to explore, but still within the parameters of painting if I just kind of look at it from a different perspective. So for me, the constraints of limiting myself to always working within the practice of painting isn't an academic concern, but rather the opportunity that limiting yourself brings you, that it allows you to really explore in depth the possibilities within a very small realm and really push the possibilities of that boundary.
So there's an expression that goes something like, perfectionism is the evil of good. Yeah?
Yes.
you're in charge.
Well, I bring it up because it's actually something that in our creative work here, it's actually something I navigate on a daily basis. For my own, I oscillate between self-doubt, is it good enough? And this is pretty good, how come more people don't get it? every day. So that and it's a constant thing. I mean, I'm always thinking about it, and they're over there like, oh my gosh. I mean, it becomes a thing where this is good enough, and also like we're done, like with this design solution.
Right.
This is it. You know, how many? I just this morning I said no more options, because we're like, we can come up with a few more renderings. No more. This is good.
We flushed it out. We're done.
Yeah. But I think I'm not afraid to say it, because I think creative people come from this place of is it good enough? And I just wonder, I do think with age it gets better. I mean, you're like really confident in your ideas, but I just wonder did you come out of the gate like that, or you're just like, now you know upon reflection that you have an ability to kind of be flexible with your like choices?
I don't know. I guess that's a tricky question, because I feel on one hand, yes. Like, I feel like, you know, there are a few people here that are dear friends of mine and know me, and they would say that the answer to that question is yes. Right, Lisa?
Yes.
I mean, just because I don't, you know, I'm not, of course I think about whether or not something's gonna be received in a positive way, or whether or not someone's gonna like something, or, you know, like what's coming out of me, you know, because it's personal being an artist, and, you know, like your work is a very personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I try not to sort of think about it in that context, and I think that's what propels me to just kind of continue on my path and journey to stay as focused as I can. But I'm also hypercritical to say that if it gets there, then it's what I want it to be. And if it's not, then it wouldn't be there, and this wouldn't be it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds abstract to a certain extent, but it's kind of like when it's done, and I feel confident, 100% confident about what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I recognize that it's not going to appeal to everyone, but you're not an artist because you're here to appeal to everyone, you know? Otherwise, we'd be doing something else, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the finishing part, or is it good enough, is always a tricky thing. In my practice, I really think about what I can learn from the process of making things. And in the end, it's not about, nothing's gonna be perfect to start out with. Like, you start out with an idea and you want to do it, and hopefully you'll get close to that. But there's a point where you're just wasting time that you could be putting into the next iteration, the next project you're doing. And sometimes it's like, oh, I could keep working on it, because sometimes you can work on a piece for months and months, but you're just wasting time that you could be producing something new that's going to let you learn more, because you've already learned enough from the piece you were working on. So for me, it's like trying to take the piece to that point where it's good enough, I've learned what I can learn from it, and let's apply those things to the next piece I'm working on. It's funny, because I think the creative process, obviously it's different for everybody, but there has to be, there has to be a lack of, like a bit of abandonment. You need to be allow yourself to just abandon the works before they're perfect, because you're never gonna, if that's the goal, you're gonna spend your whole life working on one piece. And I think that it's more interesting to consider how you develop as an artist and the way you can keep on perfecting your practice in the long term, rather than whether one piece is the height of your practice.
Right? And don't you look at your work sometimes and you know which, I can look at my body of work, and there are definitely ones that are my favorites that I think are stronger than other pieces. I mean, I don't know how many artists, you know, like, I think that if you're having a one-on-one conversation with an artist, they'll be honest about that.
Are your predictions, do your predictions result in this one sells faster, or this one, I mean,
I don't know. My experience has been, if I think something is really, really like
you got it.
Yeah. then I generally, other people see that too, but you know, again, it's subjective. I mean, that's the beauty of art, right? What might appeal to someone might not appeal to someone else. It's no different than, you know, sitting in this room and looking at everybody. And, you know, like I use the analogy of, like, you walk into a room and, you know, there might be 100 attractive people, whatever attractive means, right? And you're connected to that one or one person, and there's a reason for that. And I think art's the same way. Like, you can walk into an artist's studio and you're surrounded by, you know, multiple paintings or sculptures or whatever, or drawings. And then I always ask that question when someone comes to my studio, what is your favorite piece? Because I'm just curious, you know, like, I'm curious, like, what they felt the most connected to. And I, not that I use that as a barometer of, like, how I proceed on the next evolution of the work. I just want to know, like, I'm curious.
No, for me, I'm really lucky because my wife has this really keen eye. And it's something that's really weird because, like, I'll do these paintings. I'll be like, oh, which one do you like the most? She's like, this one's the best one. And she takes it, we take it to the show, and it's, like, always the first one that sells, you know? And yeah, so she has a really good eye. But, like, then it's weird because sometimes I'll be like, oh, this painting is great. She's like, eh, it's not really ready. And I'm like, wait, what do you mean? But it's helpful because, yeah, no.
Still cooking, still cooking.
Yeah. No, and she's like, well, if you're convinced, you're convinced. Like, what, I mean, you're the artist in the end, you know? Like, you get to choose. So there's, like, a couple of things at play, and one of them I've realized is that when you're engaged in the creative process, or at least for me, like, at the end of, like, making one of these paintings, I am just sick of it. Like, I cannot look at them. And I look at them, I'm just like, oh, this is awful. I really messed that one up. I wish I'd done this way. I wish I'd done this other way. And so as soon as I can get it out of the studio, I'm just, like, happy because I'm like, I'm done. I'm on to the next thing. The new one's fresh. It doesn't feel like I've messed it up. Like, it's full of possibilities.
Right.
So, like, I can't look at them objectively.
I don't have that experience.
We're so different.
Which is great because, you know, like, we're very different. Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't feel that way at all. Like, I feel like, you know, I actually, like, kind of, there's something that saddens me, like, when a piece leaves, like, my studio. You know what I mean? I feel like, you know, because there is, you know, the heredity of the work, and it's all part of, like, this ongoing family, generations of work that are all tied in, and I know exactly where that drawing was derivative of and where it came from. So it's almost like I'm keeping track of every single thing. So therefore, like, I feel like when something leaves, I'm missing a part of the puzzle now, you know? Like,
No, not for me. For me, I think it's like when you have this really good friend you haven't seen, and you invite him over, and you're like, oh, let's spend a week together.
Right.
And then you're so excited, and you get the first day is great, second day is great, third day is great.
I can relate to that.
And also at the end of the week, you're like, oh my God, can you just leave? You know, like,
I mean, I can definitely relate to that.
I love you, but give me some space.
Right.
But the thing is, and I was talking about this with another friend that's in a different creative media. You know, he's a different practice. And he was telling me that he gets sick of what he does because he repeats it. And for me, like, I send a painting out, and I'm so sick of it. And then, like, I know, it's awful, but I'm sick of it. And then I won't see it for months, years, you know, it goes off, it's living somewhere else, it has a different life, it doesn't belong to me anymore. And then, like, I'll be invited over to a house or an exhibition, and I'll see, and I'm like, I actually did something all right here, you know? Like, it's a pleasant surprise to say, after some distance, seeing that friend is nice again,
right,
you know?
Right.
So it's, but for me, that's the experience.
Right, yeah. I mean, I feel that way after once it's gone and then I see it again, I still feel that way. Like, I'm happy to see it, you know? But, you know, I have the same experience with friends, too, like, you know, or with family. I'm like, okay, we're done. We're done.
So most people would not know, if they didn't read about your work, they wouldn't know the origin of how these ideas get started. Can you share a little bit about?
Sure. So I guess, like I mentioned, for me, it was always really difficult figuring out what I was going to paint, what the subject matter of my work was going to be. And like I said, like, the weight of history was always there. It was always like, how can I speak to this? And rather than speaking to it or having a comment about it, I realized that it was much more interesting to have a conversation with history. And so for me, the idea of having a conversation with history opened up the realm of possibilities of appropriating images that I was interested in, be they Renaissance, Baroque paintings, early modern paintings. But using these kind of like as raw materials or as samples in contemporary music. So what I do is I scour the internet and I find like really high resolution images, be it from the Met's website, El Prado, the Louvre, Pompidou, whatever, you know. And I take these images and I start distorting them as a contemporary musician would distort like a sample, a musical sample, to expanding certain aspects of it, reducing other ones, eliminating other ones, and I do this all digitally. And I start working that, and so I have like a very basic armature with ideas of color because it retains the palette from the original paintings, but the kind of proportions, the forms are really distorted. And from there, I start thinking of how I can use this armature, these forms, these ideas of color and drawing to really expand upon the vocabulary. And I start taking ideas of how other artists have approached painting, creating different textures, different brush strokes, different ways of touching the canvas, and using those materially, you know, because I'm really interested in the material possibilities and properties of painting, and how you can kind of juxtapose different stylistic elements, different ideas and approaches of painting, all harkening back to different moments in the history, in the broader arc of painting, back into one painting that kind of functions as a meta-historical narrative. Not necessarily a historical painting that harkens back to one moment. It's not like I'm painting the Battle of Waterloo, but rather I'm painting the whole war, or rather the history of mankind, but rather through the history of painting, you know? And so my painting is always referencing back to different techniques, different processes, different ideas of how you construct a painting, how you use painting as image, how you use painting as something much more plastic, you know? Because in the end, I do believe that painting can't be considered only an image, but rather it's a constructive process or a kind of document that really registers the way it was produced from beginning to end, you know?
And the idea that you talked about early on about like creating the sense of space or the spatial qualities, is that what drove the painting on the board and the shape of like creating your own shape along with it? It's not the usual canvas.
No, is that what happened is that when I started with this process about 6 years ago, when I started appropriating these images and distorting them, I was still thinking about distorting the image and putting it back into a conventional format. But the ideas of space, at first, the paintings at first were very flat. They were very graphic. And I think that I realized that at first it was really only about distorting the image. That was like the conversation, or at least that's how I started the conversation. But then I realized I could start referencing different moments, appropriating different textures. And those different textures were not only creating, a visual space in the canvas, but they were also creating a conceptual depth, a historical depth in the narrative that was playing out within the work. But when I was distorting them, I still kept on reducing, cropping back into like the strongest points, and the whole distortion of the support of the area, of the format of the works, was being brought back into a conventional medium or size or format. And that was, in a way, ignoring that part of what defines a painting is its format. So while I was distorting the image, I was bringing the format back to its original state. And when I realized that, if I was going to distort things, if I was going to play with the image and the possibilities of modulating that, that was in itself going to modulate the format, and the format had to be, that had to show through in the final paintings. So that's what took me to break out of the kind of more traditional square or rotundos and go into a very non-regular format and start playing with the ideas of depth and space. But it also paralleled this other idea, you know, that there's this idea that goes back to the Renaissance, but in Mexico, there was this muralist called David Alfaro Siqueiros, that he really worked within the idea that painting should function as a total experience. A total experience meaning that it was an experience that the spectator could not escape from. And this is an idea that comes from the Renaissance. And you see like paintings by Paolo Uccello, where he does these huge murals and it'll be like, it wraps around the room. And the idea was that the spectator walked into this room that documented this war. You know, it had the Battle of San Lorenzo, the Battle of San Romano, and a third one that I always forget the name. But the idea is that through sheer scale, you're bringing the spectator into the pictorial space. Siqueiros did this, but on a grander scale, because he would paint into the rafters, he would paint into the architecture. He modulated the architecture of the buildings where he put his murals in to really envelop, physically envelop, but still working in scale. But the thing is that I think that painting is a lot more, let's say, subjective. The way that we encounter painting is more as an individual experience. The painting has an image that it sends out, or it has an experience that that projects towards the viewer. But us as viewers, we encounter painting with our personal experiences, and none of us can perceive painting the same way as someone else. And so, or art, like anything, everything that we experience is very subjective. So when we start thinking that the experience of art, the way we experience art is subjective, then we start understanding that the experience of painting, the painting itself, doesn't exist on the canvas. It exists in this kind of imaginary space between the spectator and the work of art. And so when we start playing with the way art is experienced, whether it's through lighting, through format, through how you contextualize the approach to the artwork, all these things modulate the experience and the way the painting is taken in. So playing upon the format itself is kind of like a more mental way of playing to this idea of total painting, because the painting doesn't exist as a window anymore, that we're being kind of projecting a space that is beyond where we exist, but rather forcing the spectator to encounter painting as something that coexists in the same space, more as an object that cannot kind of like be ignored, but something that is total and present all the time. Sorry, did that make sense?
Where's the soccer? Yeah, no. When I went to your studio, I was taken by the scale and like the extremes of the scale, from like on the table to like the cutouts to the tape. Do you call them tape drawings or tape paintings?
Drawings.
The tape drawings. To the large scale, bigger than us kind of thing. I was also taken by the canvases that are like the shaped canvas, basically. Can you talk a little bit about scale and this process of like breaking the canvas apart?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. So just kind of a little background on the work and sort of the process. Again, my work is always derivative of the past into the present. So, you know, I'm not looking to another reference to like create my work. My reference is my own work. So, you know the early photonastic body of work, which was the documentation of light and space. And then as early on as those days, you know, which was quite a long time ago, I would trace out those one-dimensional light sources and then scan them and rotate them around themselves. And I got into this sort of discipline of breaking down mathematical and scientific theory. So Manoit Mandelbrot was a French theorist who essentially said, no matter how you twist and turn an object, the shadow of light will regenerate another form of itself. So from that point on, I started generating fractals from my own work, taking and isolating forms within the context of my drawings, my paintings, my early photographs, my kinetic paintings, and from each stage in each body of work and in its life, I would decide that I'm interested in you, I'm interested in you, and then I would take that form, rotate it, create shadows of light as if it were regenerating fractals of its own origin from its own DNA. And from there, then each and every body of work subsequently became yet another, you know, reincarnation of itself. So getting back to your point with the paintings that you're referring to, you know, all of those shapes and all of those fractals are not random forms. They come from my own archive of information. And I'm very much into breaking things down to the point, like I said earlier, of it being unrecognizable. So there are times when I'll complete a painting and then I decide I want to cut it up again, like literally just cut it into the parts that it came from. It would almost be like extracting like a family member from one family and then not seeing them, like we were referring to friends for a while, and then suddenly bringing them back all together again. So I'm very much interested in sort of taking the information, taking it out of its origin, making something else of it, and then bringing it back to its origin if I feel like, you know, it's necessary. So in relationship to the pieces you're talking about, that's an example of having done that. Or then expressing them through the drawings or the relief drawings or the paintings or the sculptures or the vector sculptures, which are the wire armatures that are literally the negative and positive space that exists between the paintings, like the infrastructure. Like if I were going to take that painting and three-dimensionalize it and extrude it to become like a building, then I'd be interested in the beams that are building, like the infrastructure of a building that are the paintings.
Well, so you're actually making works, but you're also, I mean, what I saw included like videos for installation concepts and much larger scale, like very large scale ideas. So, and so how does that, like, are you making those renderings? Are you drawing that? Like,
yeah,
how
so,
do we
so,
get from?
So, you know, getting back to the point of like, I like this idea that the work is being reincarnated, you know, that it's coming to life, not in an environment that it's comfortable in, right? And suddenly I'm looking at an external landscape or environment and thinking about how that work will cohabitate in a different life, you know, a different way, you know, how will it interact with the environment and the elements of the environment? And I consider all of those things. But I think it has to do with like what you were discussing earlier about pushing boundaries. You know, for me, it's about where can I take the work and how can it continue to exist and live beyond its original or origin of where it came from. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like making it uncomfortable in a way. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's me like personally pushing myself. And I think that there is a mirror image of that I've learned more recently about mm-hmm. like how that interplays with my own personal experiences.
Mm-hmm. And are we allowed to touch on the idea of there's the making of the work, there's the selling of the work, there's the image of yourself as an artist, there's the image of the work. How do you reconcile all of these ideas of, you know, you're clearly both so passionate about the work that you're making, how do you then change gears into all the stuff entailed with having to sell the work?
Okay. You know, I've been really fortunate. I've worked with a gallery for 10 years in Mexico called Arronis, and I found a really good partner with them, you know, because that's the way I if you have a good gallery, they're your partners. They're not just selling your work, you know. They're helping you achieve what you want to achieve. And with that gallery, I found a really good partner 10 years ago. And now I started working here with Mark Strauss Gallery. And with both of these two galleries, they're really my partners. They're good team members because we're all working towards the same goal. I mean, of growing, letting me achieve what I want to achieve with my practice. You know, I mean, obviously that entails economics. You know, like I need to be able to support my practice because otherwise, like, I'm not going to be able to make anything. Okay. But it's really tricky because there are times when you realize that you've made something or you've done a body of work that people are like, oh, this is great. Just keep making it. You're like set. You're going to like you're going to make a killing. You're going to be able to buy a house next year or whatever. But, you know, luckily for me, in my case, I've had the support of my partners, my galleries. When I've told them, you know what, I think this work has gone as far as it's going to go, and I need to switch gears. I remember just when I started this body of work I'm doing now is that it was the first time I'd had like real economic stability. And this was due in part because the gallery had been pushing it, we'd been showing it, it'd been selling well. And I said, you know what, I can't do this anymore. Not only my wife said, you can't, like, we're going to have a kid, you need to think about like our financial stability. And I told my gallerist, I'm like, I'm doing new work. I showed him like the first sketches I'd been doing. He's like, he looked at me, his eyes kind of bulged, and he was like, are you sure, you know? And I said, yeah, I'm sure. Like, I can't do the work I've been doing. And he said, all right, I trust you, you know? And so in the end, having a team that you work with that supports you has allowed me to free up a lot of my mental space to really focus on pushing my work. But not everybody gets to do that. And also that ignores the fact that you can't always just trust your gallerist to for all that, you know? You need to take some of that upon yourself. And I think for me, that means like being involved. Not necessarily like, I'm not spending time selling my work, but rather how do you promote yourself? Because that in the end loops back into that kind of like structure of like, oh, they'll contact you, you'll push them, like send them to the gallery or whatever. But it's like, how do you portray and talk about your work? How do you present yourself, present the work? And that helps you build kind of like a presence, you know, because we don't live in a bubble, you know. We can't, like that romantic idea that you're just gonna create in like your studio and you're gonna send stuff out, you know, is very different.
I agree. I mean, you know, like, you know, having a partnership is really important. And I know, like from my own experience, having been with Robert Miller all those years, and then when they decided, you know, they were a really important gallery, they closed because, you know, they had kind of, that was it, they were done. So, you know, like the idea of sort of finding a new partner, like, you know, and that's why it's difficult, because just because a big gallery wants to represent your work doesn't mean you want to necessarily be there. And you want to have the one person that you have a relationship with. It's like a marriage in a way. You know, you're like, you're committed to one another. You know, you have a sensibility together. You know, you have a dialogue. They understand you. They understand your work. And that's not something that just happens overnight. So I agree with you wholeheartedly that, you know, like that is really important. You know, and the nature of the work in terms of the way people discuss art now, in terms of, you know, as an artist, it's hard to hear your work as an investment, right? Like, everyone's talking about, you know, the value of things, and, you know, and so that's the last thing an artist wants to hear. Yeah, you want to hear that your work is doing well and it's valuable, and but it doesn't have to be financially valuable. It could be valuable to someone because they love it so much, you know what I mean? And that, I think, was the original, like when people would collect art to just collect art because they really, really loved it. And I think we live in a very different, you know, world now in terms of, you know, for many different reasons, but I think in the art world in particular, you know, there that is a consideration for sure.
So I think buying it because we love it is the perfect note to end on.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Does anybody have any questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm curious, you talked a lot about subjectivity and people's approach to art, if you know that is a subjective response. I'm curious, when you're pushing art into projects for your clients, how are you translating your subjective love for a piece or your subjective feeling that needs to go in that space? Sorry, I didn't.
No, that's good. That's a great question, and I think, I mean, what Joseph is talking about is exactly what I try to bring to our clients, which is like cut the intimidation, cut the intellectual quality. Like it's kind of like food or music. You just kind of know if you like it, and you know, and to sort of help them remove the layers so that they can feel the purity of the response is sort of my job. So I have a sense when I meet with people for the first time, I have a weird, mysterious process, and I actually like visualize different artworks that I think would grab them. But I'm not always right, and sometimes when I'm taking them down this path, it actually helps inform me of going down another path or whatever. So it's a process. It's not just like, here's an option, let's go. I mean, it's usually, you know, 30 or 40 options, and then we narrow it down. But it's like helping people relate to the work and like exposing their true feeling. And instead of like, do I like that? I'm not sure. I mean, you know if you like it or you don't like it. It's all very, yeah. We good? Oh, we are gonna have drinks now. Thanks so much. She goes, this was her closing.